The other day, or night, I spoke to you on the how to be a soul winner, how to always be in the will of God, how to know Jesus better, how to never doubt, and how to never fall. How many remember that sermon? All those things I told you, how you could have all five. And I mentioned those are five treasured things, a way that you can be a soul winner and be in the will of God, know Jesus better, never doubt, and never fall. I showed you in 2 Peter chapter 1, verses 1 through 10, seven things. In those seven things, right in the midst of those seven things that you have to do to get these five things, was the word temperance or restraint. Probably the most forgotten of all Christian virtues is the word temperance, a restraint. For too long we have used the word temperance concerning abstinence of alcoholic beverage. The truth is, temperance is a great Bible doctrine. It, for example, it's listed in the fruit of the Spirit, Galatians chapter 5 and verse 23, right there beside love and peace and joy and long-suffering, is the word temperance. How long has it been since you heard a sermon on temperance? You've heard sermons on love. You've heard sermons on joy. You've heard sermons on peace. You've heard sermons on long-suffering. But you'll hardly find a sermon anywhere on the subject of temperance or, if you please, restraint. In Titus chapter 1 and verse 8, interestingly enough, temperance or restraint is listed as a virtue needed by a pastor. And God knows that's the truth, and I'll mention that a little while later. But Paul writes to Titus and says, Titus, there's a particular thing that preachers need. Now, a preacher needs everything that every Christian needs, but a preacher needs a little double dose of temperance or restraint. In Titus 2:2, the apostle writes Titus and says, you tell the older men that they should have temperance. What does that mean? Please do not write while I'm talking. Put your pens up and listen to me. I'm preaching to you. I want you to listen right now what I have to say. I'm preaching to you, not teaching a lecture now. So please do not take notes. Listen to me as I preach. I have to say that every week, I guess. But I'll say it every week if I have to. I want you to listen. I'm preaching to your heart, not to your notebook. And so Paul wrote Titus, and he said, tell the old men to especially have the virtue of temperance. When Paul was before Felix in chapter 24 and verse 25, we read a while ago, said Paul reasoned with Felix of righteousness. That's understandable. You'd think that. And it says later on of judgment to come. That's understandable. But Paul reasoned with Felix about temperance. And that's a strange thing to put in between or sandwich in between righteousness and judgment to come. But Paul, reasoning with Felix, the political leader, he reasoned with him concerning righteousness, and that simply means justice, right decisions, doing right, being just. And then at the end he said, judgment to come, you've got to face God. But right in the middle of that, he puts the word temperance. He reasoned with Felix concerning righteousness and temperance and judgment to come. Now then, listen carefully, look right this way. I'm going to give you the definition of temperance or restraint. I'm going to use from now on the word restraint, and I want you to get the definition. And this is my definition. I didn't read this anywhere, and it may not be right, but of course I'm sure it is. Restraint is this. Restraint is the hold. Listen carefully. It is the holding back of what you want to do and could do and shouldn't do. That's brilliant, isn't it? I'm amazed at my brilliance. It is the holding back of what you want to do and could do and shouldn't do. Number two, it is the holding back of excess in what you should do. I said number one, restraint is the holding back of what you want to do and could do and shouldn't do. By the way, that is one of the great secrets to the Christian life. When you can hold back what you could do and want to do but should not do, that's character and that's restraint. I've said so often, if I were to challenge Mike Tyson to a fight, of course, if he keeps on getting in trouble, I'd be like, whip him in a little while. But if I were to challenge Mike Tyson to a fight, it would take more power on Mike Tyson's part not to fight me than to fight me. Because he could blow hard, and I'd be gone. In fact, I may look at his muscle and faint. But if he did not fight me, it would take more power than it would to fight me. And take more courage, by the way. It is the power of restraint. But not only is restraint the holding back of what you want to do and could do and should not do, but it is also the holding back of excess in what you should do. Many things that you should do, but you should not do beyond a certain point. Restraint is when you start doing something that you should do, and all of a sudden you hold back that which you should do and do not do it in excess. Now, let me make it a little easier for you to understand. Restraint is the strength to withhold between when you want to do what you shouldn't do and when you don't want to do what you shouldn't do. Would you look at me for a minute? Listen to that carefully. Restraint is the strength to withhold between when you want to do what you shouldn't do and when you don't want to do what you shouldn't do. I said this last night. Restraint is the paramedic. The paramedic comes when you have a heart attack or suddenly you're stricken ill and you call the emergency line and the paramedic comes. Now, what's the paramedic's job to do? To cure you? No. His job is to hold you steady and keep you and care for you between the house and the hospital. Now, restraint is the paramedic that comes to you when you want to do something you shouldn't do, and to sustain you and restrain you from doing what you shouldn't do until you get to your senses and realize you shouldn't do it and do not want to do it. Now listen to me. Most of our sins are impulsive sins. Most of the things we do wrong are done impulsively. We lose our temper and get mad and bawl somebody out. I mentioned this. I was up in Michigan. I think I told you this in a sermon. I'm not sure. I was up in Michigan preaching for Dr. Willett in Michigan. So they let me have a car. They got it from a car agency, a brand new, beautiful, old, I think Oldsmobile, beautiful car, big car, and let me drive it while I was there. Well, Monday night, I did not drive it, didn't need to. But Tuesday morning, I thought I'd get up and find me a restaurant and eat some breakfast. So I got in the car. I drove it about 10 blocks, 8 or 10 blocks, and had a wreck. And, of course, it was totally none my fault at all. None, not at all my fault. I've had probably a dozen wrecks in my life, and it's an interesting thing. I guess by coincidence, it's never been any of my fault at all. But I was going toward the sun's. It wasn't my fault. It was the sun's fault. And it was sun up, driving east toward the sun, and looking for a restaurant, as I always do. That's a story of my life. And I was looking for a restaurant. And so I was looking the right, and the sun was shining right in my face, and all of a sudden, a car came around, and I don't know whether the light was red, green, chartreuse, maroon, I don't know, I wasn't looking at the light, and when I'm looking for a restaurant, I haven't got time to look at stoplights and stuff like that, so this car, I was going this way, and the car was turning left, and just as it turned left, I ran into it, and there it was. Brand new car. Didn't have but about 12 miles on it. And my soul. Dirty bric-a-brac, a pack of lumber, botcha, splatter rip. I get out of the car. There was an older lady driving it. She must have been 62. And her daughter, a younger lady, was in the car, and the little boy, the daughter's son, and the driver's grandson in the back seat. Well, this young lady, before we'd stopped real well, she sprang out of the car. Oh, she used some words I never heard in my life before. They were what I mean when I say dirty bric-a-brac, a pack of lumber, botcha, splatter, rip. And she cast some choice words, me word. And so I said, ma'am, I'll take the blame. I'm sorry. I'll take care of it. I said, I'll pay for you fixing your car. And she kept on. Oh, dirty bricker, black and fire, long blotch, blotch, flat rib. And that's not what she said, but that's English for the Greek I just quoted. And she was upset. And I said, ma'am, I'm sorry. I said, I'll pay for your car, whatever it is. I'll pay for it. And I said, so for about 5 minutes, she just let me have it. But I never raised my voice and never talked unkindly to her. And finally, she said, I'm sorry, mister. She said, I have been very, very mean to you. And she said, you've been kind to me, and I want you to forgive me. And I said, you're certainly forgiven. And I said, look, could we settle this thing in a hurry? I said, I've got to preach this morning at the First Baptist Church of Bridgeport. Her mouth fell open that far. She said, oh, no. Oh, no. She said, that's where I go to church. And then all of a sudden, she looked like she'd been struck by lightning. She said, oh, no. You're not Dr. Jack Hiles. And I said, yes, ma'am, I am. And everything got kind and sweet. Now, the truth is, the lady, apart from her vocabulary, was a pretty decent gal. But see, your problem is in that first 5 minutes. See? By the time she collected her thoughts and realized how she should respond, she was a lady. But between the time that the cars were hugging each other, between the time the cars collided, suddenly, see, no restraint. Now, restraint is that which keeps you from saying what she said until you get to the place where you know you shouldn't say it. She did not want to cuss me out after 5 minutes. And I did not want her to cuss me out during the 5 minutes. But the honest, simple truth is, she wants to do right, and she wanted to do right. But between the time that while she wanted to let me have it, and the time she did not want to let me have it, she did not have the paramedics to come and to take care between the house, which is when you want to do wrong, and the hospital, which is when you want to do right. And so I say again, it is the strength to withhold between when you want to do what you shouldn't do and when you don't want to do what you shouldn't do. It is just as bad, somebody said. It's just as bad, somebody said, to want to do it as to do it. Now, that's a sign of your ignorance. That's always said with a person that blew his stack. Well, it's just as bad for you to sit there and think it is me to say it. Watch out, your ignorance is hanging out. No, it's not. The truth is, that's what restraint is. Restraint is when you want to say it, you don't say it until you don't want to say it, and then you haven't said it. Now, that's what it is. Now, listen. Everybody in this room has wanted to tell somebody off. And by the way, I have wanted to tell folks off as much as you wanted to tell you off. I tell folks off. I wanted to tell you off, I know that. but Brother House, I've just got a short fuse. Now listen, restraint is holding that fuse and not burning that fuse until you get the place where you don't want to set the fuse off. And that's why I'm sorry. And you wouldn't have to say, I'm sorry, near as much if you had the restraint. And Paul said the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, and mentions temperance or restraint as a part of the fruit of the Spirit. No wonder God wanted preachers to have temperance. No wonder He said to preachers, you especially need to have temperance. Why? Because we live in a glass house. And people are always attacking us. And Paul said, I want you to hold it back. You could fight, but don't want you to fight. I want you to hold it back. Don't let that scare you again this morning. But hold it back. Paul said, restraint.
Listen, I don't want to hit you. Paul said, hold it back till you don't want to hit him. And that's what restraint is. Let me give you an example. Okay, God showed it in Hosea. The very familiar Hosea chapter 4, verse 17, where God came to Ephraim, and sometimes the tribe of Ephraim represented all of Israel, and I think so in this passage. God came to Ephraim and said, Ephraim is drawn to his idols. Let him alone. God said, just let Ephraim go on to the devil. Let him go on to hell. He's joined to his idols. Let him alone. And then in chapter 11, verse 8, he said, how can I give thee up, O Ephraim? While God was about to double up his fist and pour his wrath on Ephraim, all of a sudden, God's love grabbed his judgment. And God's love said, I can't do it. I can't hit him. I can't do it. And God restrained himself. And I want to tell you something. Every single person in this house today has at your disposal as much restraint as anybody else does. And it's time you started using it. Let me give you another example. Let's take this matter of revenge. Revenge says, okay, let me give you the order of restraint. First, I want to get back. Now, everybody wants to get back. If somebody mistreats you, everybody wants to get back. Somebody said, Brother Hiles, I wish I could be like you and didn't want to hurt my enemies. I want to kill my enemies. You say, preacher, isn't it as bad to want to do it as to do it? Well, ask my enemies. They're to the dire of me. Think it. If you ever think about killing me, it's not as bad, I want to tell you right now, it's not as bad to think it as it is to do it. Did you get that point? Everybody listen carefully to that point. That's the devil's talk. It is infinitely worse to do it than to think it. And so, here, I have an enemy. I want to get back. And I could get back. But I won't get back. Why? Because I have temperance or restraint. I'll not do it. My fist says, punch him. My restraint says, don't do it. You're going to be sorry. And so my restraint holds me back from revenge until I don't want to seek revenge. And as soon as I get to the place where I realize, see, you're not going to think of all these scriptures at one time. When that lady went a block out of the way and hit me with that car, while I was sitting still, parked, my flashing lights on. Well, now, I didn't have, she got started cussing me. I didn't say, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. I said, I think I'll tell her a thing or two. Now, after a few minutes, I thought, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. A soft answer turneth away wrath, you see. But I didn't say to myself, okay, she's cussing you, be nice to her, a soft answer turns to her. I wanted to knock her in the puss. I wanted to use her teeth for dice. I You feel better now? Huh? You feel better? And Brother Hiles has the same feeling you do. But there's only one difference. My restraint grabbed myself. My restraint... And my restraint held me until I could get to the scripture. A soft answer turneth away wrath. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. Bless those that curse you. And that's what it is. And that's what you need. And let me say it again. The difference between a person that has used a soft answer to turn away wrath and the person that fights back and gets revenge and seeks vengeance, it's not that we're different. The Bible says there's no temptation taken use of, but such as is common to man. That means if you're tempted to punch somebody in the nose and you do it, that means that everybody in the world under the same conditions would like to punch the same guy in the nose. Quit hiding behind your lack of restraint. Quit blaming God for giving you a short fuse. You don't have to fight back. You don't have to seek revenge. You don't have to get vengeance. But you've got to learn between the time you want to do it and don't want to do it, you've got to hold yourself until you don't want to do it. Take, for example, this matter of discouragement. You don't, listen to me carefully. You don't have to be depressed. I'm so sick of these temperaments, I don't know what to do. I'm so sick of blaming your disposition on your mistakes and weaknesses and sins. I don't care if you're choleric, that's what they used to have one time in a plague in the world. Choleric or melancholy, that's Hooker. He's melancholy. His head is shaped like a melon, his face looks like a collie. That's the first inkling I've ever had. You sailors ever listen to a word I say while I'm preaching. But you say, hey, I'm melancholic, and that's why I do like I do. Or I'm sanguine, and that's why I do like I do. Or I'm choleric, and that's why I do like I do. No, you're a sinner, and that's why you do like you do. But every single person here, whether you're sanguine or choleric or melancholic, whatever you are, God says you're supposed to have temperance. Grab yourself between the time you walk to do wrong and... Anybody wants to get up and walk around and do it? Time you walk to do wrong and the time you don't want to do wrong, grab yourself and restrain yourself. And you can do it. There's not one single... There's not one single person in this room this morning but who does not want to do in a certain reaction the same thing that every other person in this room wants to do. Now the difference is this trait and virtue of temperance, of restraint. Restraint is that thing that grabs you and holds you still between the time you want to do it, the time you don't want to do it, and that way you won't have to be sorry for what you did. Time some of you men learn to behave at home. Time some of you Hiles Anderson, young husbands, learn to restrain yourself at home. Time some of you young wives learn to restrain yourself. Time some of you teenagers. Well, you know how teenagers are. If teenagers are Christian, he's supposed to have the grace and the virtue of restraint. And I'm simply saying, all of us want to do wrong. Take, for example, discouragement, I mentioned. Depression. You don't have to be depressed. Now, wait a minute. All of us are tempted to discouragement. So what are we supposed to do? Listen carefully. I want to be depressed. And I could be depressed. But I shouldn't be depressed. So I have got to restrain myself from depression until I want to be happy. Restraint can keep you happy instead of sad. Restraint can keep you encouraged instead of discouraged. Restraint can keep you joyous instead of being depressed. You don't have to be depressed. Because something comes all of a sudden and it hits you. Now listen carefully. It hits you. And that something almost destroys you. All of us have to face it. We're all the same thing. Oh, Brother House, if you just had my problems, I do, and you have mine. And I don't have any more than you have, and you don't have any more than I have. And we all have access when we come to the place where these problems all of a sudden come on us, and we say, oh, what will I do? And all of a sudden discouragement's coming down the road. Grab it! Grab it! Hold it! Restrain it! Just shout or sing or do something and don't whine and complain or have a pity party until God can come and say to you the 10,000 reasons why you ought to be happy today. Depression is sin. Discouragement is sin. My Bible commands you to have joy and cheer as much as it commands you not to steal or commit adultery. Depression is sin. And you don't have to be depressed. And you don't have to be discouraged. There is this great virtue of restraint. And God said, okay, take the matter of extravagance. Extravagance is sin. In any area, I'm talking right now about monetary. Extravagance is sin. That's why you should not buy a garment or anything right away. You ought to look at it, give it some thought, and you ought to restrain yourself. Now, restraint is the time between you when you want it and the time when you don't want it. The tragedy is, most of you, during that time you bought it. That's too late. But restraint, you say, I want that, I want it. But the truth is, you don't need it. And so you grab yourself and hold yourself until you don't want it anymore. That's what restraint, and that's what temperance is. Somebody ought to learn that the Bible's more than a book that says you shouldn't get drunk or go to the harlot in Candyman City, or you shouldn't take dope. There are other sins, and the sin of intemperance is wicked and vile and filthy and rotten and stinking, and God hates it. And by the way, you get this matter of restraint, and it'll settle all these other things too. You get this matter of restraint, it'll settle your liquor. It'll settle your immorality. It'll settle your stealing. If you'll get this restraint, if this can grab a hold of you, don't do it. Don't do it. I want to. Don't do it. I don't do it. Hold it. Because you can get some sense in your head. And then once you get the sense in your head, you want to do right. But at first, you don't want to do right. You want to be extravagant. Take the matter of quitting.
I'm just not happy.
Show me one place in this Bible that says you're supposed to do what makes you happy. Whoever said that?
But I'm just not happy.
Your type will never be happy. You could have diamond studded shoelaces and you wouldn't be happy. And you get to heaven, you'll gripe because the glare of the golden streets that comes from the light of the world. The reason you're not happy has not one single thing to do with what you have, it's what you are. He's with the house. I'm just the kind that wants to quit. Welcome to the club. I've been preaching 42 years. Pastor in 42 years. I've resigned every Monday morning for 42 years. Now the difference between the difference between a fellow who quits and a fellow that doesn't quit is not that one's a quitter and the other's not a quitter. One restrains himself from doing what he shouldn't do because he wants to do it. I want to do it, I'll do it, but restraint says, hold it! You'll be sorry you did that. You won't want to have done that. You'll look back and wish you hadn't. Hold it! Hold it! Hold it! And restraint holds you tight there until you get to the place where you'd want to do what's right. And that's what temperance is. And that's what restraint is. Same thing's true about selfishness. You want something. Restraint says don't take it. Don't get it. Shouldn't have it. But I want it! You won't want it after a while. The thing that you steal, you won't want it after you've got it. So restraint says, I want it. And I could get it. And restraint says, you don't need it. Hold it. Hold it. Actually, it's restraint and temperance is the quality that keeps you from doing something that you'll be sorry you did. And immediately, whenever you come to the place where you're tempted, that's what lust is all about. A young man sees a beautiful young lady. And she lures him and tempts him. And God pity the young lady. But she lures him and tempts him. Any red-blooded young American male in the world would be attracted to a beautiful young lady who's tempting him. What's the difference? In the house, it just doesn't affect me. I'd rather it would. There's no difference. Old Dr. Bob Jones Sr. used to put it this way. I wish you could have known him. Old Dr. Bob Jones Sr. used to say, here's a young man. He goes out, walks down the street. Beautiful young lady smiles at him and speaks to him. She's gorgeous. She lures him. He follows her into sin. Another young man goes out, sees this same beautiful young lady. He looks at her. He's tempted just like fellow number one was. He wants to do the same thing fellow number one wanted to do. She lures him. But fellow number two says, no, that's what temperance is. That's what restraint is. Restraint says, wait. Don't do it. Don't exercise this thing you want to do. Don't reach for this thing you shouldn't have had. Don't go to this place you shouldn't go. Don't do it. Hold it. There'll be a time soon that you'll wish you hadn't done it. I'd rather you come to that time not having done it than having done it. And that's what restraint's all about. And that's what losing your temper is all about. There's not a person in this room that is any more strongly enticed toward any one sin than every other person in this room. That's the difference in somebody that gossips and somebody that doesn't. All of us would like to tell bad news. Just like when we're the first one to tell somebody a joke. Hear about so-and-so? Did you hear about so-and-so? But all of us would like to do it. But restraint and temperance is when all of a sudden you say, I'd like to do it, and restraint says, you ought not to do that. You're going to be sorry you did it. Don't say it. Don't say it. Don't say it. You're going to be sorry. Now, listen. The thing to do, you're going to be sorry you did it. The thing to do is to arrive at that point of being sorry, of not wanting to do it before you do it. And that's what temperance is. And that's what restraint is. The most powerful force in this world is restraint. It would take more power to stop Niagara Falls than to keep Niagara Falls going. I want to say this. The longer that you are tempted to do something and consider doing it, the more powerful the restraint must be. And the more difficult it will be for you not to do it. Now, I've said several things this morning. I've said in the first place, you don't have to gain revenge, but everybody wants to. Everybody, by reflex, immediately, wants to get revenge. Everybody is easily discouraged. Not you more than anybody else. See, I wish I was as cheerful as she is. Then be. I wish I could be as happy as he is. Then do it. Come on in. The water's fine. Restraint is when you want to get revenge, and you could get revenge, but you hold it until you don't want to get revenge. Restraint is when you could be discouraged and would be discouraged, but you restrain yourself from discouragement until you are encouraged. Restraint is when you want to be extravagant and would be extravagant and could be extravagant, but you restrain yourself from extravagance until you don't want what you shouldn't have. Restraint is wanting to quit, and all of us do, wanting to quit, and being able to quit, but holding it back until you don't want to quit. Restraint, okay, all across America. I meet former Howells Anderson College students. Listen, same ones that come to my office like young lady was this week. I want to go home and stay. Same ones. I meet them all across America, and here's what they say. Tell the students not to quit. Biggest mistake of my life, they say, was quitting school. Biggest mistake of my life. Now, isn't it tragic that they didn't have enough restraint to stay in school until they could have gotten to the place where they didn't realize it was the biggest mistake of their life? Somebody said, well, you got to learn by experience. No, you don't. Not if you have restraint. Not if you have restraint. If you learn to withhold that which you could do. Okay, your wife, she tells you off. She blows her stack, as all wives do. No. Sometimes they do. Sometimes they do all the time, and all the time they do some of the time. But okay. And what do you want to do? You want to get her back? You're not going to talk to me like it. I'm the hell. Hold it. Just be quiet. There'll be a time coming in a little while where you won't want to fight back. Now, if you can just hold yourself until that time comes, you can understand what it is to have temperance. No wonder Paul said the old men ought to have it. I'll close with this. All across the country, something's going on I hate. Here, I have question and answer sessions almost every Tuesday with preachers and full-time workers. I'd say 50% of the time, this is one of the questions. Dr. Howells, you're getting up there. What plans do you have for somebody to take your place? That's why the Lord told old men to have restraint. That's why He said to old men, be temperate. Have temperance. Because I leave the building, I go to my room alone, and I think about it. Everybody thinks I'm about too old to be out in the pasture anymore. Or old enough to get out in the pasture. Everybody thinks I'm ought to think about who's going to take my place. Ain't nobody take my place. Look at the choices we have. Nothing up here worth... Anyway, so what do? I do what you do. You go to bed. Pull the cover up. Not me. First thing I do is I say, I'll not be discouraged. I'll not be discouraged. I'm not going to do it. And my restraint grabs a hold of my discouragement just before I get to it and keeps me from my discouragement. And while I'm being, while I say, I'll not be discouraged, I'll not be discouraged, I say, then what are these tears falling out of my eyes for? But I'll not be discouraged, I'll not be discouraged, I'll not be discouraged. And then all of a sudden I'll start to think, I go back to the gate of Thanksgiving. And I say, how good God's been to me. How good God's been to me. I walk with the King, hallelujah. I walk with the King, bless His name. No longer I roam, my soul faces home. Now, what kept me from despairing? Restraint. What kept me from quitting? Restraint. What kept me from talking, fighting back? Restraint. What kept me from being depressed? Restraint. And that's the virtue that will change your life. And it's such a small period of time between the time the car's hit and the time she said, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. A good lady with a feeble vocabulary, but a good lady. And that little 5-minute period between the time the car's hit and the time she said, I wish I hadn't said it. I wish I hadn't said it. If somehow we could learn the great virtue of restraint or temperance, it would transform our behavior, and most of the big sins we commit would never be committed. It would get that paramedic of restraint to grab us at the house when we first have the seizure and keep us from doing wrong till we get to the hospital of grace. But your unsaved friend, you can't have this, because this temperance is a fruit of the Spirit. It's a part of the fruit of the Spirit. If you're not saved, you don't have the Spirit. So you have no restraint. The Holy Spirit is the restrainer. It's His job to restrain. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 5 through 8 or 10. It's His job to restrain. You have no restrainer because you're not saved. And that's the reason you go ahead and languish in sin and wallow in sin like a hog does in a quagmire. That's why you do it. But you come to Christ and receive Him. He gives you His Spirit, and in His Spirit is temperance or restraint. Look at me and I'm through. Why don't all of us decide this morning to practice this virtue of restraint? Why don't we decide this morning that starting today, whenever we're tempted to do something that we should not do, that we want to do, that we could do, why don't we grab ourselves for a while, stop that mighty force until the time comes we say, I really didn't want to say it anyway. I'm glad I didn't say it. Somebody said, Brother Howells, when you get a nasty letter, what do? Write a nasty one back. I've written more nasty letters back than answered letters. Anybody in the whole world. Write them back. Write them wrong hand. Will you ever hear from the people that you send the nasty letters to? Didn't say I send them. I said I write them. But I restrain putting a stamp on the envelope. I restrain putting it in the mailbox. And then one day it hits me. I didn't want to send that letter. What kept me from making another enemy? Which means 6,455,923. What kept me from doing it? Restraint. restraint. There's no temptation taken you, but it's common to me and everybody else. Somebody said, isn't Brother Colston a good, solid fellow? No, he's a wicked, dirty, rotten, crooked, impetuous, hot-tempered sinner. That's what he is. Well, why does he always act like he does? Restraint. If you live with Elaine Colston, you'd know how much restraint he really has. Thank God. Why don't we just decide to restrain ourselves until we come to the place to where we're glad we didn't do it instead of wishing we hadn't done it? That's that little period right there. It'll change your life. The last 40 minutes this morning, 43 minutes or so, could transform your life. Not as spectacular as teaching on heaven, but it could transform your life. Whatever I am, and I claim to be nothing great, whatever I am, probably this sermon this morning is more responsible for it than anything I know. Restraint. Would you bow your heads, please?